And we're live. Welcome everybody here to your favorite day of the week. I am Anthony Irwin, turning on my light, joined by Pete Zayas. This is The Hook. Pete, how you holding up?
Doing well. It's been a long off season, and we're finally here on a game night, man. So I'm super excited to have a couple games this weekend, and then another week off, which will be torture, but we'll get
it. It actually like works out well for the Lakers. Not so well for us because it's, you know, again, it's kind of like Eurobasket where it was like a taste of it, and we're like, you know, but like for the Lakers as a squad,
I totally agree.
Given their injuries and stuff, you get to dip your toe in the water, get back out, focus on practice for a week, jump back in. Today on the show, we're going to be talking about Rui being the likely starter. I reported earlier in the week, and our reaction to that. I haven't spoken to anybody about it since. So I've just been basically talking into the void about it in the comment section, which, you know, it's good for the sake of the show, and I enjoy talking to people, but also I like talking to human beings and seeing their faces as well. So we're going to talk about that as a possibility. I think we both kind of disagree with it, so we'll explain why. Then also take that next step and explain how it could work if this is indeed the path that the Lakers are taking forward. And then with Marcus Smart potentially not starting and with him already dinged up, you know, does that reshape the offseason that the Lakers had? Would we have to regrade it and looking back and then looking ahead to what they need? I actually think if the Lakers aren't going to start Marcus, then I think they should probably trade for the actual starter that I think they still need. So we'll have that discussion. And then finally, as there is a game tonight, we are going to preview it. Like, I'm really excited, Pete. I don't normally get too juiced for preseason games or whatever. Especially with the Dodgers in the postseason and you know, the stressful existence that is. But no, I'm like really looking ahead to this one, and it's just to see it, like all of the things that the Lakers have talked about. I think we actually can learn quite a bit from this game and these games, even with LeBron in and out of them and Marcus not playing in the first couple or whatever. So yeah, I'm pumped. Let's go ahead and dive on in. A reminder before we do, please hit that subscribe button, please hit that like button, all of the good buttons. And then if you guys are listening to this in its podcast form, please subscribe to the pod wherever you get your podcast, preferably on Odyssey, because we are company men. All right. Let's start with the Rui thing. So essentially, as it has been basically framed to me, Pete, as much as I think we would have liked for Marcus to have been kind of the gotten the inside track here, it appears to be the inverse of that Rui always had kind of the upper hand on Smart in terms of likelihood of starting, and then Smart got hurt, you know, and is not able to participate in the first week or so of training camp, which now makes Rui the I would call it far favorite, you know, distant favorite, to start on opening night. What do you think of that decision? Where do you stand on that, or at least even the process of it? Where are you at here?
I disagree with it. I understand the rationale behind it. It's, you know, and there are a lot of times in basketball where you got to choose between one thing or another, and you always have to think about both options. And very rarely are you 100-0 on those decisions. This is like a 70-30 for me, where I feel strong enough to stand on it and be like, this is why. And my main rationale is this, is that I think that if you don't have a guy whose main job is guarding the perimeter, you take a whole bunch of different defensive coverages off the table. You can't really put pressure on the ball. We also heard Redick last week at Media Day say that it's really against his beliefs to put two on the ball. So how are you going to put pressure on the SGAs, the Ants, the really top-end guys? You can't just let them do whatever they want. They have to be able to feel you, right? And so peel off switching and scheming and, you know, trying to trap them into – it's going to work to a degree. You have to be good at it, but you also have to be able to pressure them with actual players. And so I don't believe a starting lineup where you could argue that 41-year-old or about to be 41-year-old LeBron James at his peak is the best defender in the starting lineup. Is that a contending team? I don't think so. And so it's just a matter of, I don't think the Lakers are lacking the ingredients or pieces, but I do think that this is, I think it sets them off on a bit of a difficult path, while also understanding that health and these guys have a level of familiarity. They should be fine during the regular season. You know, even if they did this the whole regular season, they could totally win 50 games again. I think there are some dangers in going to this early when LeBron's going to be ramped down, right? Because as I say that about LeBron, that's when he's at his peak and when he's turned up in terms of volume defender. Who's your best volume defender in the starting lineup, right? When Ayton has been a productive rim protector or defensive five, it's been in a really good defensive structure where he had Bridges and Johnson as the attack defenders.
They weren't exactly like funneling guys to him.
Exactly. You know? And he was part of that, right?
Accidentally or on purpose. Yeah.
Right. And he wasn't bad at that at all. I don't want to downplay that he was legitimately good at that, but it was not as a, I'm going to save a bunch of bad defenders from getting to. Yeah. And even AD, when we put AD in those situations, that's very tough for him too, you know, and he could do it, but asking him to do it 35 minutes a game for 75 games a year, it's a tough ask. And so I think it sets the Lakers off on a difficult defensive course with the starters early on. But it's also, like I said, it's basketball and these are 70-30. Let's see what it looks like, right? It's the first game. This is the time to try stuff. It's a long season.
Your mic cut out. That was kind of weird. I'm gonna take that a step further because I believe you can hear me, right, Pete? You can hear me? All right, cool. So I'm going to take that a step further while Pete works on his mic, and you're good. So I would add on just really quickly before we move on to like the how it can work and that aspect of it. I listened to your pod with Raj and with Darius and with Mike. Mm-hmm. I just think in terms of Twitter. So I'm like, his name isn't
Canyon.
But no, it was a fantastic episode. You can, you know, obviously, if you guys are following this show, I would imagine you guys follow Pete's, but just in case you don't, change that, the Laker Film Room pod. But essentially, the premise of the pod, and I don't want to give too much of it away, is that, you know, Raj and Mike were making the case for Rui starting. You and Darius and I are all aligned on we think that Marcus Smart should be starting. And one of the points that wasn't made was, you know, because you guys talked about it. And I think the best case for Rui starting is he's the more talented player. And
yeah, they're starting their best five players, right? That's part of the argument for it is those are the best five dudes on the team.
Yeah. And so from that perspective, it is kind of unassailable, you know, in that regard, like in a way, you know, it's a talent versus fit type of debate, which is a science versus religion debate. You know, it just is what it is when it comes to basketball. But one point that I don't think gets made often enough when it comes to the starting group is the downstream effects of playing certain guys in certain roles. And when you're starting Rui and now you have to figure out a way to maintain decent spacing with Marcus Smart and Jared Vanderbilt and Jackson Hayes coming off of your bench, like that's really tough. And I wanted to, you know, kind of when we get to that point, or, you know, in this conversation, we'll talk about what it can possibly work or how it could possibly work. To me, the number one reason why I'm concerned about Rui starting doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the guys that are going to be on the court and some of their deficiencies. We know what those are. And I do think over the course of an 82 game season, you can play with enough smoke and mirrors that you can get through it. And like you said, win 50 games, whether you start Rui or Smart or not. Mm-hmm. But to me, you know, we keep on hearing the rave reviews about Jared Vanderbilt. Well, that would indicate to me that they're trying to find a way to get him on the court. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we know that Smart, the reason that Rui would be starting in JJ's, you know, according to his principles, would have a lot to do with spacing. Well, then, therefore, inherently, Smart is the lesser floor spacer. And then by the time those two guys are coming off of the court, one of Austin or Luka or LeBron are coming off of the court, those three guys are all better shooters than all of the three guys that we're talking about here. And so unless you're basically bringing, you know, Smart and Vando into the game and Jackson into the game, and you're just letting the dogs loose and just, you know, wreaking havoc defensively, which I guess is an identity that a lot of bench teams tend to go to, it's just really difficult to have such a stark contrast from one group to another. What do you think about that notion?
No, I think that's the case. I do think that you can, like, if you have an offensive group, if you can sort of blend into the defensive group eventually, that's the best case scenario. But I generally don't like all one direction or the other. I think that both come with difficulties. And what you're speaking to is just look beyond the starting lineup, and there's going to be groups out there where it's like, oof, we're going to need Luka to be amazing. And I don't think we want that either, where, look, there's going to be some nights where it's, yeah, Luka can carry an offense by himself, and then all you dudes play defense and we'll be fine. But I think that there's going to need to be some two-way play out of those spots. And so remember, this is how we started last season as well, where D'Lo started and we had that all offensive group. But then the end of first quarters, we really had a hard time scoring because LeBron went to the bench, Gabe and Max. And remember, Max started very slowly, but then ended up being the ideal starter. Right. Yeah. The team that really hit its stride was with Max at the two, because that's what Max does for a living, is he guards the ball. That's like the main job that he does, and then can hit spot up threes. That was exactly the type of player that we needed. And we went 18-6 in the games that he started. And so that's sort of the argument. Now, Smart isn't the shooter that Max is, but he brings other things to the table. Right. But anyway, I think that it's just a matter of balance. Basketball is such a great sport because you need to have so many different things represented, because all five players play both offense and defense in a way that no other sport is. It's quite the same. I'm a believer that you have to have certain jobs represented, that with the starters, if you don't have the guy who can guard the ball, that's a red flag there. But then with the bench groups, it's like, you can't have too many guys that the other team's like, oh yeah, I'm fine with you shooting this semi-contested jumper and we'll be fine. You know?
Yeah. I think of basketball and lineups, especially with basketball, you know, you guys know this if you guys follow me on Twitter, but I love cooking. I got into cooking over the last few years. And when you cook, you're always thinking about, you know, every, you know, it's a salt, fat, acid, heat is essentially what you're always thinking about. And with a lineup, you know, yeah, like there are some dishes that you could just overwhelm somebody with heat. Right. You can bring the fire and sometimes that's what people are into. Right. Like, you know, I love, you know, shrimp a la Diabla, you know, like I love that shit. Like that's a good, fun meal from time to time. But 82 games of shrimp a la Diabla.
Might not what you have for breakfast every day. Right. Yeah.
Right. Right. And I think when I think about like this notion of starting Rui with all these guys, I think of it as like a really, really, really rich meal. You know, it's like a pot roast where, you know, it's really good, but I only want to make it like once or twice a month, you know, because otherwise you're just weighed down by it a lot. And, you know, it'd be nice to add a different flavor set or a different, like the one problem that I often have with like pot roasts is it's a lot of mush. You know, so like, where's the crunch going to come from? Can you add some crunch into this thing? That's why people often serve it in or with toast, because it just gives that your mouth a different sensation. And that to me is where Marcus Smart would kind of fit in here, where you do have a lot of like, you know, braised beef with Luka, and you have these super rich potatoes with LeBron, and you have these perfectly cooked vegetables with Austin, and the gravy that kind of puts it all together with Aiton.
Sure.
But you know, with Rui, it's like, all right, so what are you going to add, another gravy?
Sure.
You know, like it just feels like, it feels like compounding a strength to the point where you're no longer making it a strength.
Right. And only one guy can shoot the ball ultimately at the end of an action. And so that can be difficult. That said, Smart physically, this is a conversation that's the difference between on paper and reality, right? What you pointed out early on about how if there was a chance for Smart to be like, oh, I'm going to be healthy, starter, needed to be healthy, and he's not. So maybe one of those ingredients isn't ripe yet. But Vando, right? Vando worked great when it was him and four dudes who could play offense.
Yeah.
The D'Lo, Austin, LeBron, and AD, and obviously you have a special defender on the back line of that too, that made that pick and roll defense, like Vando on the ball and providing back pressure, and he's funneling into Anthony Davis. That's nasty, right? Like, and that's why it's a two-person job and important that both of those guys do their role. But that's when he was at his best, right? So how do you see Vando? Like, Vando's the guy that's getting rave reviews in terms of how he looks physically right now.
Well, so a point that I want to make, or I was going to make later in the pod, was how I think if Smart isn't starting, then you need to go out and trade for the guy who will be, who should be, right? Who does connect that starting group. And we know that the Lakers, they just like every other team, they like to wait 20, 25 games or so, see where the team is at and stuff. Over the course of these 20 to 25 games, I do think we do need to see Vando in the starting group if Smart can't get healthy, just to, again, get that different look. That way, by the time you do make that decision, you know, on what kind of a trade that you're looking to make, by the time you do make that trade, you will have seen every look that you can get. But yeah, I have always been of the mindset that Smart makes the most sense there, but he's already dinged up. He's been dinged up for basically the majority of the last couple of years. He plays a style that does age players quickly. So,
and ding you up. Yep.
Yeah. So like that, and given his ask, right, is, hey, sometimes you're going to guard a point guard. Sometimes you're going to guard a big wing. Sometimes you're going to guard Anthony Edwards, who's like a mix of both, you know, and that is a big ask, you know, for somebody that the Lakers are really going to need in the postseason. So, I think Vando does help solve that issue of having both him and Smart on the bench, or needing to come off of the bench at the same time. The other thing too, Pete, is that like the reason that you got a Smart and the reason that you employ a Vando is to bother the other team's best perimeter ball handler, right? Like the idea is if you can stagger those two guys for 48 minutes, you can have somebody that's really annoying that player. So yeah, I'd be down with starting Vando at some point over the first 20-25 games of the season.
Sorry to sidetrack. I don't know if you saw the news. Luka out first two games of the preseason.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah.
I didn't see that. I wish I hadn't. That's tough. Because, all right. I guess we'll kind of flip the show for a second here. I was going to do this later in the show. I'm of the mindset, Pete, that like I don't care about winning any specific preseason game, but I also don't want to go over 6 or whatever it is.
Yeah, that's usually a harbinger. I was saying this on the LFR pod we've recorded today, that even though, yes, these are preseason games and they don't count, the legendary consider this a warning game, where the Lakers, remember, after they won the game, my guy Joey, you know, we were feeling ourselves, and AD made his debut as a Laker and they looked freaking great. You know, that was kind of a way of announcing. I remember the Warriors in the 2015-16 preseason. We played them a couple of times and I was like, oh my God, these guys have really taken a leap forward. And I'm a 49er fan, so a lot of my friends are Warrior fans. And I was like, I think you guys are going to the finals this year. That you can make some statements early on, you know?
Yeah. Well, either way. Right? Remember?
Yes, both ways. Yes.
remember the Dwight Mare season, right? Like where it was like, they, I think they went 0-5 or 0-6 that preseason, and all of the games weren't particularly close, and those minutes when those starters were playing together weren't all that pretty, and it was like,
this is fine, right?
And then like, you know, shortly into the season, Kobe, remember the last thing that he did with Mike Brown was shoot lasers out of his eyes at him, you know, because of the Princeton offense that Brown wanted to run. Like I said, the first couple of games of preseason are the first couple of games of preseason. And I know the Lakers keep on talking about how cautious and overly cautious they know that they are going to be, right? Getting an MRI on Maxi on what apparently was just kind of banging knees, right? Somebody got him with a knee, you know, running that MRI, bringing LeBron along slowly, all that stuff. And it's like, look, preseason is a luxury until it isn't. You know, like training camp is a luxury until it isn't, because you don't, the Lakers don't have the benefit. Yes, they have a lighter schedule, but that means that they're going to have a heavier schedule down the road.
Oh, yeah.
And they need to rack up wins quickly when this season starts.
That's an important start. Yeah.
That was actually one of the reasons that I was told that starting Rui made sense internally to the Lakers, is because, like, this is something they know
that right now
they know that they can rack up wins that way.
I understand that argument. I think there's merit to that.
Yeah. Let's get back to what it could look like if Rui is starting, and how the Lakers, you know, because it's not like a, like one of the points that the question I asked Darius, right, in the Great Western Forum pod that we recorded a little while back, was like, how much does starting so-and-so matter, right, one way or the other? And the point of it was like, and I asked it specifically of Darius because he's Mr. Nuance, right? So it's like, and I thought he gave a good answer where it's like, it's easy to say it doesn't matter because, and I don't want to speak for Darius, but I believe I'm characterizing this correctly, but like, it's easy to say it doesn't matter because there are already two games and there is a lot of time to adjust and all this stuff. But it does matter in the sense that, like, this is basically identifying your identity this season. And it does matter in that sense. And I think he's right on both fronts. That said, starting with Rui, I don't think it's a sky is falling type of decision. Not and sure. And it is the kind of thing that they can adjust from if they need to. And I do think there are ways that it could, clearly it can work. They won 50 games.
We've had this conversation, man. The offseason is over. This is the direction that they're going in. Let's accept the premise and talk about, okay, this is what it is. What's the best way to make it work?
Yeah. So what is the best way to make it work?
Well, again, I think it takes some defenses off of the table from the perspective of, you don't really have somebody that can put pressure on a ball handler and then slide their feet and not get beat, right? And so the direction I think the Lakers are going to go in is the one that they went in last year, which was very heavy on peel-off switches, which is, you're going to guard the ball until you get beat in one direction or another, right? So see, I'm guarding you and you drive left and you get past me. Whoever's on that side is going to peel off their guy and slide their feet over to you, and I'm going to go help them, right? I'm going to go close out on their guy. And there are different formations and traps that you can kind of form in the moment out of that when you get really good at it and get some steals and on-ball deflections. And that was part of the reason why, even without AD, they were really good defense for that stretch in February where they were playing really good ball. Like, it was really, even more than anything, driven by their defense. And there is a certain level of, this is unusual, and I think Jackson was more key to that than we might give him credit for, because for all of his faults, he is pretty fast and agile, and you need your five in that type of style to be able to sort of move his feet a little bit and react. And this is one of my concerns with Ayton, is both he's a bit bigger. He moves his feet well for his size, but just how well could he peel off switch? And then to what degree can he, like, recover and slide his feet, you know, with some guys? I think that's going to be challenged in this type of style. So, and then, but like drop coverage, I think to be a good drop coverage team, which is the most conventional non-switching type of style, you have to be able to get over the top of the screen. And that's tough if you don't have the physical strength or on-ball ability, right? So Austin is our quickest defender in the starting lineup, but he's pretty good at drawing illegal screens going over the top. But like, actually getting over the screen takes a level of strength that he doesn't have. And so you can't put the requisite amount of back pressure on the guard that's coming off of that. So, yeah, I think that the Lakers can make it work defensively with the peel-off switching, but it takes a lot of defenses off of the table that come playoff time. That's a problem.
Yeah, I would be shocked, Pete, if this was the playoff starting lineup. Like, I would be shocked if this is the final group. Then that was one of the points that Mike made basically in the pod, was like, and look, he made it in reference to the Lakers specifically, and how, you know, often the Lakers start with one group and then finish with another one by the end of the season. That's for the vast majority of teams, honestly, you know, one way or another. It's unless you see like a defending champion. Oftentimes that, you know, that team usually runs back its starting group and then, you know, is the group that usually starts the, you know, and those dynastic runs usually feature that kind of a thing. And I just don't think the Lakers are on a dynastic run. So this is going to be a moving target. I think another part of this that I think speaks to why I think there's a better chance of Rui working in this starting group more sustainably than with last year's starting group. Like if you would have swapped out Jackson for Ayton with this group, I would be more nervous about it than I am now. One of the things that I think the Lakers are one of the weaknesses from last year that I think they're going to turn into a strength this year is their rebounding.
Oh, and that would be so nice. That would be so nice.
So essentially Ayton, a good volume rebounder over the course of his career. He's always been a very good volume rebounder. LeBron, one of the best rebounders at his position ever. Luka, fantastic rebounder at his position. Even Austin very gets good.
4.5 boards. That's very good for one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Rui, like we might have our qualms about him, but if Rui is your worst rebounder in the group, like the reason that the Lakers struggled to rebound is because he was
an important rebounder in some groups.
You know? Yeah. And so I think and JJ Redick talked yesterday about, or maybe it was the day before, one of the first couple days of camp. He talked about the Lakers wanting to be a hit ahead team, right? Mm-hmm. And this is when I heard that, dude, I got so excited because that to me, like I was a point guard once upon a time and I used to love hit ahead passes because it made my job so much easier. Mm-hmm. I used to love getting the ball up the court, getting it to a playmaker up the court. And then if you guys need me to set up the offense, I'll set up the offense, you know? And to me, when you have as many great creators as the Lakers are going to have between Luka and Austin and LeBron, getting the ball up the court, giving one of your finishers an opportunity to do something in primary transition, and then also pulling back into secondary transition with a purpose, like that's something that I'm really excited about. And if it's Rui getting out and running in transition, I actually think he's going to be a better transition player than Smart, right? If he's catching those hit-ahead passes, he's more of a threat down there in those spots. And then, you know, if you back up or whatever, you get into your sets, you get into your sets. And like, I've always thought that the Lakers' best path to being a championship contender is to be overwhelming offensively and then be as good as you can possibly be defensively. And I guess by starting your more talented offensive player, that leans mm-hmm. into that identity.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the good part of it, right? Is that I think on the defensive end, it ends up putting players like Austin in an over-ask type of position where like, no, if he's your best point of attack defender in the starting lineup, that's bad. That's you're going to get cooked. That's a bad thing. And, but on the offensive end, what I think that leads is sort of there's so many combinations that you have, especially if there's going to be a lot of two and three man type of action, that there's so many combinations that you can find the weak points of the other team while also having a talented enough player to exploit that. And so that's what I think it has to be less like taking turns and more what's the different combos that we need to use with this group of five that beats this particular team in front of us. Where are they weak? Is this an Ayton night? Is it a Rui night? And then everybody being able to sort of facilitate each other's success. That said, there's only so many shots to go around. And one of the things when I heard him talk about, we want to be a hit ahead team, is you got to get a stop in the first place to be a hit ahead team. And so if you're taking the ball out of the basket, you're not going to do that nearly as often. And so, I like I said, I don't love the direction that they've gone in that respect, but I do think that there's potential on the offensive end.